that the second part of last week's broadcast, the second part of the broadcast from the last weekend in July, as well as all of tonight's program, and good portions of the next several broadcasts are going to be going into the archives as Radio Free America program number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. What we're going to be doing this evening, and I'm going to go right into a rundown of what it is we're going to be hearing, because I have a lot of information to cover. We are going to begin by taking a look at an article from the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday. There is going to be a mock trial of Lee Harvey Oswald, and mock is the word here. Apparently a bunch of legal heavyweights, some of them I would say would probably look, are going to be legal lightweights, at least in the most literal sense of the word. Some legal heavyweights are going to be attempting to assess whether or not Lee Harvey Oswald was guilty or innocent of the assassination of President Kennedy. That is rather like having a mock trial to determine whether or not the sun rises in the east. Oswald didn't kill anybody. The evidence is overwhelming. But there is going to be a mock trial about that, and I'm going to touch on this forthcoming bit of political theater to kick the broadcast off this evening. After that, I'm going to be reviewing some of the information that I presented last week, because there was a lot of information. We're going to be coming back to that this evening, and I want to underscore some of the points that were made. To begin with, we're going to review a piece by Anthony Kimmery, last name K-I-M-E-R-Y, in the current issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. That is Covert Action Information Bulletin number 41. This concerns the apparent involvement of George Bush with the intelligence community and the CIA long before his official commencement of involvement with SAME. There are substantive indications, although not definitive, that George Bush may very well have been working for the U.S. intelligence community for many, many, many years. And specifically, we're going to take a look at the intersection between George Bush's work for the intelligence community, the CIA, and his work on behalf of the petroleum industry, because the petroleum industry and the intelligence community overlap to a tremendous extent. I'm going to be reviewing that article. It was read into the record almost in its entirety last week. After that, I'm going to be reviewing a section from a brilliant essay, a brilliant document, I should say, tragically unpublished, by Professor Peter Dale Scott of the University of California at Berkeley. The companion manuscripts, the first of them is called The Dallas Conspiracy, and the second one, which I will begin, a section of which I will begin reviewing, is called Government Documents and the JFK Assassination. Professor Scott is, in my opinion, one of the preeminent political intellects on the American scene today, and these two brilliant works, for my money, the two single best and most important printed sources on the assassination of President Kennedy and the political forces that performed that and what has happened since. Those documents are unpublished, but we're going to be going into those at considerable length this evening so that people can peruse some of the information. The only place that I know where people can get a hold of these documents is once again at Tom Davis Books. I will give the address for that. Tom Davis Books, P.O. Box 1107, Aptos, California, spelled A-P-T-O-S, zip code 95001-1107. That is the only place that I am aware of where you can get a hold of these particular documents. We're going to begin the sallying into government documents in the JFK assassination and the Dallas conspiracy by reviewing the intersection between the petroleum industry and individuals like George de Morenshield and others who spied on behalf of the Third Reich and then jumped to the U.S. intelligence community at the end of World War II. We're going to review them and their pivotal role in handling the Oswalds in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I read that into this particular section of government documents in the JFK assassination into the record last week. Following that, I'm going to review and reread large sections of a long section of the Dallas conspiracy that I read last week, this by way of underscoring some points and helping to fix them in the memories of the listeners. We're going to once again study the considerable degree of intersection between the petroleum industry, the intelligence community, and the Galen Organization and related elements. The Galen Organization is the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit, initially called Fremde Heere Ost, or Foreign Armies East, when it worked on behalf of the Third Reich. That was headed up by Nazi Major General Reinhard Gehlen, last name G-E-H-L-E-N. At the end of World War II, Reinhard Gehlen jumped to the United States with virtually his entire organization, plus a lot of intelligencers and SS people who had not worked on the Eastern Front originally. That organization then became, in turn, the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, literally our eyes and ears on the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe during the Cold War. It then became the de facto NATO intelligence organization. And finally, it became the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the BND, the West German, now the German intelligence service, which it is to this day. We're going to begin by reviewing long sections of that very important section of the Dallas Conspiracy, and specifically we're going to see how this U.S. intelligence community Gehlen Petroleum Industry Nexus handled the Oswalds in detail, and we're going to begin identifying some major political forces and methodology which were not only instrumental in the assassination of President Kennedy, but which also have wielded a profound influence on the world that has come out of the events of Dallas, Texas, from 11-22-63. In particular, I want to call people's attention to an organization called the NTS, or Solidarists, or National Toilers Alliance. This was a group of white Russians, czarists, opposed to the Bolshevik Revolution, who spied on behalf of Nazi Germany and provided a very, very important element of the Gehlen organization. They then jumped with Gehlen to the Central Intelligence Agency, and their methodology and tactical approach, namely attempting to and apparently successfully infiltrating the Soviet military intelligence, the GRU, and attempting, and apparently at least to a certain extent succeeding, in fomenting a mutiny on behalf of the Red Army, that is a major tactical and methodological consideration. And we will be, during the course of this very important Radio Free America show, we will be taking a look at just how that methodology evolved, beginning with the Third Reich, and jumping then to the CIA, and how it ultimately, in my opinion, came to its fruition in the events of August of 1991, when a failed coup, there was an attempted reactionary coup in the Soviet Union, but the military did indeed rebel. That sparked the end both of the Soviet Union and of the Communist Party, and at least for the time being, and apparently forever, the Cold War. By the way, I do not want to be misinterpreted by listeners, particularly new listeners, as holding a brief for the Soviet system or for its satellite governments in Eastern Europe. I most assuredly do not. I do have a considerable degree, as a student of military history, I do have a considerable degree of admiration for the bravery of the Soviet people and the Soviet armed forces during the Second World War. They were instrumental in defeating Adolf Hitler, at least for the time being. They also saved an awful lot of American lives. But I myself am something of a cynic. I have a very low opinion of human nature, and I've always viewed Marxism per se as a childish and ultimately doomed political doctrine. Basically, to make a long story short, Marxism depends for its theoretical success on perfect human beings, and there are no such things, and I think the failures that are inherent in the Marxist system are identical to the failures inherent in the notion of free market capitalism or supply-side economics. Both systems depend upon perfect human beings who will not take advantage of their superior power and superior position in society, and that just is at fundamental loggerheads with the basic dictates of human nature and the lessons of history as I see them. Just as there was no effective check upon the power of the Communist Party, the Politburo, and the Nomenklatura in the Soviet Union, so there is no effective check on the power of not only the multinational corporations in this country, but also the national security establishment itself, meaning the military and the intelligence services. Whenever you have unchecked, unbalanced power, you have the inevitable makings, in my opinion, for abuse. So I don't want to be misunderstood on that score, because we're going to be examining the assassination of President Kennedy, the role of elements of the Gehlen organization intersecting very heavily with U.S. intelligence and the petroleum industry. And remember that George Bush was part and parcel to this milieu. We're going to be examining that at considerable length this evening. Now we're going to take a look at how these forces, which jumped to the United States, or were incorporated in the U.S. National Security Establishment at the end of World War II, we're going to take a look at how these forces were instrumental not only in ultimately defeating and breaking up the Soviet Union, but over the course of this entire Radio Free America show, we're going to take a look at how these forces subverted American democracy and have brought the American economy to its knees, and it is, unfortunately for all of us, on its knees. And this, in my opinion, and I will set forth the basis for this opinion during the course of this massive archive show, this, in my opinion, has signaled the end of the Second World War and the triumph of the Axis. Just as the full-court strategy, which I delineated in Radio Free America number 36, helped to bankrupt the full-court press strategy, just as it bankrupted the Soviet Union, so it has bankrupted the United States, and we're going to be taking a look at the overall process that was at work, in my opinion, and I will be setting forth again the documentary basis for that opinion. The single most important event in the second half of the 20th century was the assassination of President Kennedy. I do not think there is a great deal of importance in running around the grassy knoll, counting bullets and cartridge cases, or trying to figure out who the three tramps are or who the Umbrella Man was. I do think it's important for people to be familiar with the physical evidence in the case so that when you see something like this mock trial that's coming up, you will realize just what a dog and pony show that really is. After reviewing that long section of the Dallas Conspiracy, we're then going to jump back to the other brilliant document by Professor Scott, Government Documents and the JFK Assassination. This particular section of Government Documents and the JFK Assassination is going to take a look at how the American far right, specifically some of the John Birch Society and Hunt family-related elements, again, deeply involved both with the petroleum industry and with the intelligence community, forged a very terrifying operational link with the same Galen anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations elements which we have been examining to date. Indeed, one of the important lessons of studying President Kennedy's assassination is to understand that a nexus, a milieu, and an explicitly fascist milieu was formed in which many of these Third Reich graduates, these Third Reich alumni, hooked up in a strong ideological and operational sense with the American far right, in particular elements associated with the defense industry and the petroleum industry, to form what is literally a fascist axis, and the operations of that axis intersecting not only with the petroleum industry but with the defense industry and the U.S. national security establishment has proved to be a decisive element, and we're going to be taking a look at how that element operated, some of the composite elements of that particular milieu, and how they have affected world history both in the years leading up to November 22, 1963, and in the years coming out of it. We're going to be taking a look, as I said, at the Hunt family, their involvement with something called the ICDCC, that is a German-based intelligence network involving numerous Third Reich emigre. I read that quickly at the end of the broadcast last week. We're going to go into it at length and in detail this evening. Following that, we're going to take a look at this axis, this milieu, this operational and ideological hooking up of Third Reich alumni, such as the Galen Group and related elements like NTS, the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, about which I shall have more to say later. We're going to take a look at how they hooked up in the assassination of President Kennedy, and specifically, we're going to take a look at one of the most ludicrous of the many preposterous assertions by the Warren Commission, namely that Lee Harvey Oswald fired at former Army Major General Edwin Walker. Walker was fired by President Kennedy for teaching the John Birch, or requiring his troops to study the Blue Book of the John Birch Society, and we're going to take a look at the alleged shooting, Oswald's alleged shooting at Governor General Edwin Walker, I should say, how absolutely ridiculous that is. And we're going to take a look at the forces which have shaped Marina Oswald's testimony, and we're going to take a look also at how the story of Oswald shooting at Edwin Walker, supposedly disclosed to the Warren Commission and FBI by Marina Oswald on December 3rd, in fact was relayed to a German neo-Nazi paper called the Deutsche Nationalzeitung und Soldatenzeitung, published by a fellow named Gerhard Frey, This was relayed to Gerhard Fry, an associate and admirer of Edwin Walker, and the admiration was mutual, and it appeared in the Deutsche Nationalzeitung and Soldatenzeitung on November 29th, 1963. Now, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that if this information was supposedly disclosed to, for the first time, to the known world by Marina Oswald on December 3rd, but actually appeared in a German neo-Nazi paper days before that. Obviously, this indicates that there was something rotten in Denmark under the circumstances. We're also going to take a look at the ludicrous physical evidence being presented to bolster that untenable argument. Initially, all authorities who had examined it reported the bullet that supposedly was fired by Lee Harvey Oswald at Edwin Walker as a 7.65 millimeter Mauser, basically the .30-06 caliber converted to a NATO calibration. And we're going to take a look at how that mysteriously metamorphosed into a 6.5 millimeter Carcano round, this to implicate Lee Harvey Oswald. One of the people who helped to frame Marina Oswald's testimony vis-a-vis Oswald's alleged shooting at Walker was George de Morenschild, a German spy, a colleague of George Bush, and a major operator in the petroleum industry. The other people who handled the Oswalds both before and after the assassination, Marina Oswald obviously being the only survivor of that couple, were people involved, again, with the Galen Organization, White Russian, and other Soviet nationalities that had emigrated to the United States under the auspices of Galen / CIA, and they were instrumental not only in handling the Oswalds, but in creating the story that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. We're going to take a look, too, at the elements that Gerhard Fry and the Deutsche Nationalzeitung and Soldatenzeitung were affiliated with in Germany, and specifically we're going to begin looking at organizations like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, people like Theodor Oberländer, a former SS man and a key liaison officer between the Galen Organization and the White Russian turncoat army of General Andrei Vlasov. We're also going to be taking a look at organizations like the CIAS of a German intelligence veteran named Fritz Kramer. By the way, that's spelled C-R-A-M-E-R, and we're going to take a look at how these fascist elements in Germany, these Third Reich alumni, have hooked up, again, in an operational and ideological sense, with the American far right, as exemplified by John Birch Society personalities such as the Hunt family and Major General Edwin Walker. After that, that, by the way, will come from the Dallas Conspiracy. We are also going to take a look during the course of this particular examination at the Hunt family's operations vis-a-vis the assassination of John Kennedy. The Hunts have never been directly implicated in the assassination, and I want to underscore that, but their names have cropped up in connection with the investigation, and we're going to be taking a look at that. We're going to take a look at Jack Ruby's having visited the offices of Hunt family patron H.L. Haroldson Lafayette Hunt the day before Lee Harvey Oswald was shot, or perhaps it was the day before the assassination. When I go into the documentation, we will talk about that. We will also take a look at connecting links between Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby with Major General Edwin Walker. We're also going to take a look at how Nelson Bunker Hunt, one of H.L. Hunt's sons, was instrumental in paying for the black-bordered ad in the Dallas Morning News that appeared on 11-22-63, accusing President Kennedy of treason. We will be looking at two books, Coincidence or Conspiracy by Bernard Fensterwald and High Treason by Robert Groden and Harrison Livingston for that particular information. After that, we're going to be taking a look at a long section, once again, of the Dallas Conspiracy, and we're going to be taking a look at the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, a key element of what was to become the World Anti-Communist League. We're going to begin looking at the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and related elements operations vis-a-vis the assassination of President Kennedy, how elements associated with this were involved with helping to traffic Lee Harvey Oswald and the Oswalds around in the United States, and we're going to take a very long look at the elements, I should say, that were involved in this particular milieu, and specifically we're going to be taking a look at an organization called the WACCFL, that's the World Anti-Communist Congress for Freedom and Liberation, that was the steering group which 4 years after the assassination of President Kennedy was to metamorphose or mature into the World Anti-Communist League, an organization which it may be familiar to many listeners as a key player in the Iran-Contra scandal. We're going to be taking a look at some of the component elements of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, the OUN-UPA, the Bandera organization, a Ukrainian fascist organization, which was a key element of the Gehlen organization during World War II, became a key element of the Gehlen organization when it jumped to the United States, and elements stemming from the OUN-UPA, specifically the RUKH organization, spelled R-U-K-H, are the dominant element in the now independent Ukraine. Now, just as we are going to be examining the tactical and methodological operations of one Third Reich intelligence group, specifically the NTS, a White Russian group that worked with the Third Reich, we are also going to be taking a look at the operational goals of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. The NTS, although opposed to Bolshevism and working with the Third Reich and later U.S. intelligence, did not want to see the physical breakup of the Soviet Union into its constituent ethnic republics. The anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, which, despite the fact that it was allied with the Third Reich, along with NTS and later the Gehlen organization, it was at loggerheads with the NTS and competed with it. Ultimately, the political goals, the operational goals of the ABN, namely the physical breakup of the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, into its constituent ethnic republics, well, of course, that has now been achieved. So two of the main elements that we're going to be looking at here are the tactical and practical operational methodology of the NTS, namely infiltrating the Soviet Army, and in particular the Soviet Military Intelligence Unit, the GRU, and fomenting a mutiny by the Soviet Armed Forces, and the operational goal of the ABN, namely to break the Soviet Union up into its constituent ethnic republics. That has now happened, and the vehicle for doing that was a mutiny within the Soviet Army in August of 1991, in which the Red Army of the Soviet Army refused to follow the leaders of its the orders, I should say, of its hardline communist leaders in attempting to overthrow Mikhail Gorbachev. We're going to be taking a look at how the ABN-related elements trafficked Lee Harvey Oswald around. We will take a look at the possibility that the NTS may have also been involved in trafficking the Oswalds around inside of the Soviet Union when they were there. And we're going to take a look at a very important methodological aspect of the Kennedy assassination, namely the work of elements associated with the WACCFL in attempting to paint the assassination of President Kennedy as a Soviet assassination conspiracy. Specifically, we're going to take a look at attempts to portray Lee Harvey Oswald as a Soviet agent, because many of the members of the Warren Commission who helped to cover up Kennedy's assassination were doing so because they felt that if the American public came to perceive that a communist or a Marxist sympathizer had assassinated President Kennedy, that might result in a Third World War. We will also be touching on an essay that appeared in a recent issue of Tikkun magazine, that's spelled T-I-K-K-U-N, in which Professor Peter Dale Scott describes how the Soviet assassin disinformation necessitated in the minds of some members of the Warren Commission and associated elements a cover-up of the assassination of John Kennedy. We will also be taking a look at a section of the book Blowback by Christopher Simpson, and we're going to take a look at how some of these elements, namely the NTS, the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, and many of the Gehlen Third Reich emigre, came to be incorporated into the U.S. national security establishment, and how, as a result of their participation in the U.S. intelligence community, they were projected into the American political milieu, and it was just such a projection which enabled these very same elements to participate in the assassination of John Kennedy, a very direct interference, obviously, in American political life. We are going to take a look at how the methodology which ultimately came to fruition in the Reagan-Bush years and was concluded in August of 1991 represents a continuation of Third Reich espionage and political and psychological warfare techniques which were pursued by the U.S. national security establishment, and specifically as a result of the participation of the Galen Organization and related elements in the U.S. intelligence system. We're going to take a look at the politics of rollback or liberation, how they began with the Third Reich, were continued by the Galen element, and ultimately came to fruition during the August 1991 coup, in which the methodology of the NTS, the Solidarists, One Third Reich, White Russian Intelligence Group, and the operational goals of the ABN, another Soviet emigre group which worked with the Third Reich and later the U.S. intelligence system, they came to fruition in August of 1991. We're going to take a look, too, by way of conclusion, at two interesting bits of information. One, an article from the Los Angeles Times from yesterday, that being July 31st of 1992, for the benefit of those who eventually hear the program on tape. And we're also going to take a look at a section of another essay from the current issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin. This by way of looking at how the political forces that we will be examining in Radio Free America 37 not only were instrumental in the defeat of one of Nazi Germany's major opponents during World War II, namely the Soviet Union, which no longer exists, but this will begin to point ahead to the further development of this archive show, in which we will examine how these same elements operating in this same way brought the United States to its knees economically as well, thereby, at least from an economic standpoint, defeating the Third Reich's other major military opponent, namely the red, white, and blue, the U.S. of A., which we are all living in today, because our economy is a basket case, not to the extent that the Soviet economy was, but the full-court press strategy outlined by Sean Gervaisi in Covert Action Information Bulletin's issues number 35 and 39, which I accessed in Radio Free America number 36, the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, that very same strategy not only bankrupted the Soviet Union, it has bankrupted the United States, and it has left Germany to develop the economic resources of the former Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. As the Prussian military theoretician von Clausewitz said, war is the continuation of politics by other means. We can also turn that around. Politics is the continuation of war by other means, and we're going to be taking a look at how that continuation of war by other means, first of all, was instrumental in the assassination of President Kennedy, and how it resulted in the breakup and defeat of the Soviet Union, and how it has resulted in the economic humbling of the United States. Once again, that's what we have on tap for this evening. Hold on to your hats, get your tape recorders ready, because in addition to last week's broadcast and a portion of a number of broadcasts to come, we are going to begin taking a look at Radio Free America number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, and this is in no way a figurative representation. I will be, in a future broadcast, outlining and delineating how the historical forces that came together in 11-22-63 developed, and we will begin taking a look at how the Galen Organization, one of the most important and least understood political entities in history and military entities, literally became a Trojan horse. It literally was a Third Reich entity that we took in the mistaken belief that this represented an offering from the gods. Well, it was not an offering from the gods. There's the old expression, killing two birds with one stone. Well, the Galen Organization, as we shall see, a Trojan horse, killed one bird, i.e. the American eagle, and one bear, the Soviet bear, to the detriment of the citizens of both countries and to the benefit of the citizens and political forces and economic forces in Germany. That's what we have on tap for this evening. Hold on to your hats. After a musical break, we will be back with Radio Free America 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War.